for the Department of Indian Affairs and Northern Development here in Whitehorse, and is in charge of, in effect, inventory of our resources up here. Dr. Craig?
Thank you.
Since coal, while one of the energy sources, along with hydro, gas, oil, wood, burning moose berries and so on, can be used, but hasn't received the attention, and certainly not for quite a long time, I'm not troubled with having to go through the volume of literature and reports and figures and statistics and so on that are involved with hydro, nor is there probably as confrontive an issue involved in the use of coal. It is probably much more a matter of pure economics and pure availability. I'm not here presenting the case for coal over hydro, at least not with any great heat, but am presenting the case for considering coal with respect to hydro and various other things. And it wouldn't greatly trouble me if, after such consideration, we ended up, once again, back at the same point of view, that we're in a hydro-rich area, and it has been a major contributor for large electrical loads, and probably will continue to be so. It turns out that rock units containing coal are fairly widespread in the Yukon Territory. They have been used in fairly small amounts, probably as long as there have been people around, but certainly observed and worked on 10 or 15 years prior to the turn of the century. There have been several mines in the Dawson area, in the Carmax area, minor production around Whitehorse, minor production around Destruction Bay for Wash Landing. So my intention is simply to point out where some of these areas are and how it is that they might at least be explored rather more than they have in the past. Probably the most production and the best known part of the Yukon, which has been productive in coal, are the belt of rocks running from here right up to beyond Carmax, probably almost to Fort Sulphur. And this is called the Whitehorse Tagish Belt. The Tantalus Butte mine was, which is immediately on the south, at the south end of the bridge at Carmax, was mined for perhaps 15 years or so, from 1907 to about 1923. At about that time, the same, what became established as the same coal bed was discovered, explored, and mined in the late 1920s in what we call the present Tantalus Butte mine. Mined throughout the 30s, most of the 40s, and finally closed, I think, in 1967. But it had provided coal for domestic heating and plant heating at Mayo, for example, and Chino, probably on backhauls of one sort or another. It closed down briefly. It was then reopened by Anvil Mining Company, and presently about 20,000 tons a year are used for plant heating and concentrate drying of the lead zinc cons at Farrell. To the west, around Desviash, and further west in Tulane National Park, Amphitheater Mountain, Telluride Creek, there are deposits which have been only very briefly explored. Of the evidence we have on them so far, they've typically been fairly low in quality. And also, coal showings around Ross River, in the Layard Plain, the Weston Lake, Rancheria River area, and in quite a strip along the Cantina Trench from here right through to here. And finally, there are large basins of marine sedimentary rocks from here, essentially to the Arctic coast. And this does not mean that the whole area is underlain by coal. It means that there were such marine basins, and at the margins of these, typically, while they were covered with shallow seas, the margins of these were frequently swamps, which were conducive to the formation of coal. Now, the things that we're interested in here is the likely availability or possibility not only of the presence of coal, but of it being amenable to being found, it being amenable to being mined, and it being of such quality that it can be put to use.
And
I'm not talking here about whether we're actually going to extract from them or not, but just to try and give an impression of the areas in which coal, a particular resource compared to other resources, are distributed. There is some possible hydro potential, and various other potentials are also within the boundaries of the particular park.
In a sense, it's non-existent because you'll never be able to get it.
Sorry, but it is existing, and our handling of our land, a part of a particular set of regulations governing its use, is one set of rules by which we have to operate. This has nothing to do with whether we assess and determine what's there any more than if someone did a study of the flowers of Florida National Park. Sorry. Now, the basins or coal areas of the from the middle of the Yukon from latitude 65 south at least, and to an extent those farther north, are rather different in their characteristics to those of Saskatchewan, Alberta, and the crow's nest, the productive coast crow's nest country of southwestern Alberta and southeastern British Columbia. We're not typically dealing here with huge planar bodies in which flatly dipping with fairly thick measures, but which have continuity in a couple of directions such that they can be either open pit mined, strip mined, or that they can be mined underground by highly efficient bulk mining methods. We're dealing typically with the poor relations in the coal deposit society, in which the areas of accumulation were probably lenticular, narrow belts, many times longer than they were wide. They may even have been a series of belts and a series of swamps, which, while now forming something that might appear like an elongate zone of deposition, these may have actually existed at slightly different times in history. So even at the time of formation, they probably were lacking in the continuity that makes mining of them convenient or economical. Then after they formed, after the organic material was deposited, the formation of coal, in a sense, is just the metamorphism of the various plants, ferns, and other organic material. And particularly those in the western part, Dentyash Basin, San Peter Mountain, and so on, experience rather little of the development that produces good coal. In that particular, in those particular measures, it is mostly what is called lignite coal, typically not very desirable based on the heat capacity per pound, and it's certainly not the favored type of material. In the case of the coal measures of the Cantina Trench, Whitehorse Trough, Ross River, Watson Lake, the thermal value is probably quite good, running from probably 9,500 to nearly 13,000 BTUs per pound, which, as thermal coal goes, is quite good. This particular material is mostly what's called bituminous coal. However, as well as the limitations that I indicated on these deposits at the time they were laid down, they have since been folded and faulted and tipped up on edge and moved around in various ways. So they have anything like the anything but the continuity that we like to see in deposits for what we would call efficient mining. And before you can get into even talk about efficient mining, you can talk about problems associated with exploration for these. Because they're discontinuous, it would be very difficult to find a fair-sized body. And because coal weathers fairly readily, it also turns out that even in a coal-bearing area, the least likely thing you're going to see almost is coal. So prospecting for these coal deposits is rather difficult. Indirect methods are not typically particularly good. I won't say that no geophysical tool will detect coal measures, but certainly these small broken up deposits in disturbed areas do not lend themselves readily to detection by things such as magnetic surveys and so on. So there are a fair number of things against our deposits on the basis of what we know about them thus far. But we have a fairly important thing to consider if we talk about then let's forget about them. And that is that exploration for these to date has been governed by the economics of possible production. Therefore, the consideration has been, what are the chances of finding a profitable, exportable commodity? And the kind of coal that can be exported has typically been metallurgical grade coal. This is what has largely been responsible, I believe, for the resurgence in coal mining in southeastern British Columbia. Now, typically, this material that we've been looking at in the Yukon has not proven to be suitable to them. Therefore, it is not the kind of coal that you would think of as being highly attractive for an export market. So this in turn, I don't for the moment care whether we have an export of coal or not, but for our consideration, it has inhibited serious large-scale exploration for coal deposits. The net result is that our coal resources are rather imperfectly known. I hope I've provided about five factors why this is true. Now, and that completes the part of this that is presenting an argument that here's an energy source which is can by no means be ruled out, can by no means be presented as the answer to all our problems either, but like other energy sources, does deserve to be looked at. We now might consider briefly some of the merits of using coal if we could find it as a possible energy source. Of all the bad habits the coal has, typically high ash, typically high volatile, typically in these discontinuous deposits. However, it is, let me say, moderate in thermal value, and it is typically fairly low sulfur of the aluminum acid we've had. And so as a, of the polluting aspect, both of the plants, which would use coal for thermal generation of electricity, one of the most deleterious things is, are the sulfur dioxide emissions. And this would be lesser of a problem than it might be the case in West Virginia. Further, the coal slack, coal waste dumps, which are considered to be a fairly severe environmental problem in places like the Eastern United States, partly due to the formation of strongly acid environments. Acid water is moving, leaching through them, and so on, would be perhaps less of a problem here. And then, finally, I would suggest that the area disturbed by a thermal generation of power through the use of coal, that both the coal mine and the thermal plant would be very limited in area compared to, say, a major use of land involving some other power generation, here referring to the development of a large reservoir. And finally, when you stop and think about it, our use of land in the Yukon is mostly restricted to the river valley. For whatever they use, presumably, if I run up the 2,000 foot contour on that map, maybe using a lower base in places like this and that, and a first, or perhaps a higher base, 2,300 feet, 2,400 feet in here, probably less than 10% of the Yukon is above, I mean, it's below such an elevation of 2,500 feet or so. I think you would find that perhaps 95% of the people live there, and perhaps 95 or more percent of the roads. These are guesstimates, but it is that kind of thing. In other words, we don't live in the Yukon. We live in a very small, very select, and very special part of the Yukon. And these are the parts which are typically involved in hydro reservoirs. Our Yukon coal, in spite of the bad habits that I've mentioned for it so far, is kindly enough to occur in areas which are higher. Some of it's down low too, but some of it is in more alpine areas. And would represent a very small disturbance for a modest sized thermal plant. And I'll leave it at that point. Notice what I've said. Don't say that it is an answer, but that it is a resource. It has certain advantages. It happens to be low capital cost for a plant, and fairly high operational cost. All right, this then, for low power demands, might make it rather attractive, might make it fairly unattractive for very large power requirements. So it, coal could well have a place in our Yukon power scheme. Thank you.
Yeah, 20,000 a year. population to use that extraction, and if so, must be done now to use the county land, like, and the land to be used for the conversion of natural. What would be done so that the hydrogen be decided to resort, which is not economically feasible to export, which means it's a local resource. Well, economically, this kind of local resource.
Why don't we use, question being, why don't we use, say, town of Butte, where if we don't know the reserves in other places, they presumably have enough coal proved ahead for the particular scale of exploitation or scale of mining they're doing now. Why don't we, say, increase that 10 times and set up a thermal plant?
Again, the problem is
probably, it's still rather more expensive. And also, with respect, I wonder if there isn't partly habit, after all. We've got the hydro. It is available, it's understood, we have the people who are already working in that milieu, and it can be done. The assessments of it, I'm sure the details of a hydro plant may involve quite a bit of planning, but surely it can be recognized fairly readily that there is a hydro resource there that can be used. In the case of our coal, if you said multiply the insignificant amount of coal, or very small amount of coal coming out of Town of Butte now, if you said, I want to produce at 10 times that rate, and I said, for how long? And you said, well, 20 years anyway. I might say, well, it might take us 2 years to find that out. If I wanted to move to one of these other scales, you know, I get on shakier ground when we start talking about how long. If you say, in fact, I was asked the question, sort of how much for 50 megawatts for 25 years, and I said, I don't know. But I would think that this is the kind of thing where you have to do your homework 5 years ahead. I'm not suggesting if we had a projected increase of load next year, and you said, how should we deal with it? I would say, or 2 years from now, I'd say, well, hydro, I guess. But I think it's rather short-sighted to be ignoring something which has to be studied for 5 years or perhaps even 10 years before you can put it to use.
The point is that
working in that coal mine. And it's entirely staffed by the citizens who were born here. Tell me how that applies to some of the other mining ventures or industrial ventures we've got.
I recall that the Ajax project hearing, the Waterport hearing back in March 73, one fellow made a petition down at Temple Exploration from the Braeburn coal field.
Mike Phillips spoke on behalf,
and said there that they had already proved enough for a 20 megawatt plant for 25 years, or something like this, for that scale. And that this seems to be the gist of what was coming out of that. Is this for factors that that much coal is improved? Or is there enough exploration has been done?
I think that's substantially correct.
So we already have a great space.
Known reserve already.
Then you could, one could also examine the scale of that. I don't know what, I know roughly how much drilling was done. I think it was 3,500 feet.
Three holes.
Six holes. You get into the technicalities of the report, and if I recall Mr. Phillips' remark correctly, they were about, as you said, probably
3 million tons, there was no incentive to explore for more than that. That's the rub. When someone says, how much have we got? And if I said, well, 3 million tons was demonstrated to a particular, you have to use guides and what you mean by proving, because all you do is bring up core, but to make some sort of level of confidence on your projections between those holes. He indicated how he would say that it was this thick here, 30 feet thick here, 20 feet thick there. And from that, he based an estimate of about that amount. But that doesn't mean that that's all there is. It means there was no great point in spending more money in exploration to demonstrate 10 million tons because there'd be nothing they could do with it.
If there was a point to demonstrate the extra amount, there might be good chance it would.
Oh, there would indeed.
On the deposits you mentioned, what percentage is late night, what percentage is late night?
Oh, I just tossed in the lignite bit on those ones to the west. Because you had mentioned them as being unavailable anyway. Nearly all of this is rated, I think, as sub-bituminous B coal, 9,500 to about 12,500 BTUs a pound. It is all this high volatile, pardon me, I don't know how, whether all of it, of the work done so far, much of it falls into the rank of thermal coal.
The other question I had is, of your assay so far, what percent of pyrite content have you found?
I've never seen any typically.
Well, you mentioned there was little threat of that acidic condition from the mining operation, but pyrite content
in the operation. Again, I say we don't have much material, but I understand that what it's been looked at so far.
How do you feel with the ball field with coal?
I'm sorry, I've treated them. A couple of weeks ago, and I knew that the question isn't quite right. And when I asked this same question of the officer responsible for exploring for coal for the federal government, I said it and said it was sort of a grin because I was hoping we'd be on the same frequency. And he said, "You can't ask that." He said, "I've got three empty positions that I'm trying to fill for coal geologists, and I can't even do it." In other words, it's only obviously it would cost money, but you can't express it in money because it's time and personnel and drilling and so on.
Would the federal government actually do the work if NCC asked the work, another NCC asked to do it? Or would it have to be a private enterprise?
I don't know on the circumstances of how. What kind of request is going so far? I think they would certainly, they'd entertain such things, but it's not possible to do it.
What sort of steps do you think have to take so that, political point of view, coal would be considered as a socially acceptable, viable alternative? You've got a set of social constraints. How would you see those change? What sort of things would be done?
Oh, I don't know. Just the publicity of the fact that as every Time magazine comes out with still more concern about our energy problems, that to leave to ignore any potential energy source has to be questionable.
if we could just go out, he would talk to. This is what I have tried to do. I say, I know very little about coal and its various merits, but I keep on saying, well, if it has some merit and we don't understand it or don't understand it to the degree that we understand some other energy source, surely then we should give it some attention. This is the argument that I do. Sort of anybody who might get to listen.
I was thinking of getting a windmill. I went as far as asking some people where you got funds on windmill. I've got one. Thank you. A fair amount of research has gone into solar energy, and I don't imagine very much has been done around here. The amount of installation, INFOL, involved in the, we need our fuel when we've got the leak, we need our heat when we've got the leak.
Because when I was a teenager, the trip to the moon was in the Flash Gordon Comet. And you know, you're not looking that much further ahead of it. I'm here now. What are you going to do 25 years ago from now when you expect an extracted resource?
Well, there is this, is that even a meeting such as this would hardly have taken place 5 or 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you know, all you had to do was do more exploration and you'd have more of anything you wanted. It's only in the last five, at that time there was sort of a, perhaps a lunatic fringe that said, you know, these things might just be finite. Oh, no, what kind of a stunned remark is that? And only now are these concerns of depletion of non-renewable energy sources becoming popular.
Well, this is where I feel that you shouldn't be looking 25 years ahead. It's been an awful long time. Can you remember that?
Martin?
The UConn is a very small place, so we can follow our intentions of new developments in terms of wind, sun, nuclear. We have to look at it. It's going to sound where a lot of money is put into research and then follow on the results of the research, and research is pretty very interesting. I think in 25 years, things like sun, wind power will perhaps be economically usable to use again.
There's been a tremendous convenience and availability of gas and oil, which has led to their enormous growth in consumption, and the incredible rapidity with which they're being depleted, which we're only coming to realize over the last few years.
I think that there was a report that was prepared by the federal government a short time ago on the coal reserves in the Yukon. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah.
What I was wondering was...
I have it here. I have one of them here, which we...
What I was wondering was, what was the purpose of this report being done to the
Yukon?
The last one that was done, whichever one. I mean, I just heard about one that was done within... You know, that was released a few months ago.
I have about a 30 or 40 page report here filed by
Mr. Milner, who worked in my office, and it's mostly available for looking at in the office, I guess. And it was simply our concern that if nobody was in the state at 73, nobody was much concerned about it then, but the idea that in 5 years they would be, and they'd come somebody around and say, Craig, what do you know about this? And I was trying to do some of my homework a couple of years ahead.
But the source of this stuff mostly is in 1887, Dawson noted, in 1903, McConnell noted. This is a compilation from the literature. And its main value is perhaps the bibliography. But 80% of the work was done pre-1910. This was before the days that Oklahoma or even Alberta oil was readily available to us in the Yukon. So we were burning wood. They had a railroad 15 miles south of, or 20 miles south of Dawson, and brought coal out to the boats, and the river boats used it, and the river boats also transported it to the community. Same with Carmex, Five Fingers, Hamilton Butte.
See something in the present ownership of known deposits of Yukon coal? Like, are they under lease now? Who has them?
Well, the Manville has the coal leases at the Tambler's Butte and the immediate environs. Imagine Teslin Exploration holds what are called, they aren't staked in quite the same way. These are, they're 7.5 minutes by 15 or something. They're called territorial coal licenses, or I call them licensed areas, and they fall under a different set of regulations than mineral exploration. Teslin Exploration, then it could have those around Carmax and over to the north of Skull, southwest of Braeburn, which is where this supposed 2.8 million tons highly probable coal. Yes, I would think these would be in the hands.
I don't know much more about it. I imagine most of these were are not presently held, and presumably not those in the north. And those over in the park were expropriated and purchased by National Parks of Canada, I think, with making a financial settlement with the holders of those licenses. Any further questions?
Well, I'd like to thank you for your attention tonight. I'd like to remind you that our final meeting, the fourth meeting, will be on Thursday night here, same place, and we will have a panel discussion of what we've been discussing these past three nights. The Conservation Society will be making up the panel. We hope to get as many different viewpoints as we can and just have a really good free-for-all discussion on it and restate what we have covered on these last three nights and speculate on what we can possibly do to formulate a policy for the Conservation Society or whatever. But we want to try to review this material that we've covered in the last two nights. So I thank you again for coming.